So I did New Jersey paranormals. I know you did Delaware paranormal, but I just went off of, I went on
Well,
like
I don't care. I was just
just
telling
into
you
Cape
where I did
May,
mine.
New Jersey, and we took like it was a something an oddities tour, like a little trolley tour through the town. And the town's big claim to fame is it just has a ridiculous number of Victorian mansions that look really nice. Like they're all, the facades are all painted cute, they're all like painted ladies. And I just, during the tour, I was just like type 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 all the things she said, just as like fun local ideas for stories that I never would have found on my own, basically.
Yeah.
I would recommend visiting the town for a maximum of 24 hours,
Yeah.
because there's nothing to do other than see the cute houses. But it was a nice trip. Me or you?
Care.
I'll go then. Now here's a question. Do you want the big story first or the two little stories first?
Doesn't matter to me.
Do the little ones first because they're just like a little more confusing, so then we can end on something that's more comprehensive. So again, these are from this tour I went on. And she's like going by, like we drive by, and then she talked about like the buildings we were driving by, and one of them was called the Twin Gables Summer Cottage. I don't know if we actually drove by it. I think she just talked about it.
It's like
It's
something in the
somewhere
area or
nearby,
something,
but I
yeah.
don't think we specifically went past it because the street might not have been worth going down otherwise. So this one is like so vague to the point that it's just like for me 100% local lore and nothing more. So a family owned this cottage, and they're the ones who had the experiences specifically. Just the family that lived in this cottage. It's a summer cottage. It's a big house, so it's a summer cottage. So they had like all kinds of paranormal activity, flickering lights, footsteps, opening and closing doors, cold spots, the occasional caress of the cheek,
How
indents.
do they know a stranger wasn't just in their house because it was only a summer cottage?
Right. Anyway, indents in the bed where like someone was sitting
Yeah.
there, but there's nobody
They don't actually see
sitting there.
anybody.
And then little things would go missing and then reappear in odd places. I always assume when that's happening, is someone in the house either has ADHD, because it's so easy to do that with that, or someone's living in your walls or attic.
They could be.
So there was also an apparition that the family would see, and it was a woman with long white hair, so they called her Mrs. White.
Original.
Very original. And so they attributed
Why
most of the
not like
hauntings
Sandra?
to Mrs. White, right? Why don't they never give them a name? I'm gonna call this one Barbara. So in 2008, the longtime owner, I assume like the head of the family, died, and most of the activity seemed to stop after this guy died. So they don't didn't people were like, okay, was it just him who was haunted? Was like the spirit attached to him somehow? Like, what's up
Yeah.
with this? So a niece of the man is the one who like sort of took over the cottage after that. And after the sudden activity stopped, she was like, okay, I want to like double check. So she like asked for a sign basically to see if it was truly over. And after she did that, her husband had been painting the window seat. And they left it to dry overnight, and then in the morning when they went down there was a single footprint in the middle of the paint.
Interesting.
And so that was like their sign that she's still there. She's just not
Yeah,
like
being as active.
being as active anymore because it she might be attached to the house but was having fun with the guy kind of thing. And then another event happened during a holiday celebration. There were like a whole bunch of candles in a room as decoration. Some were lit, some weren't. Everybody left the room for a little bit. When they came back, all of the unlit candles were flipped upside down. And I don't know if that means like in their holders or what. Like, are these tapered candles? Are these
Yeah.
Bath and Body Works candles? Either way, that was like the last noted ghostly thing to happen. I can't find this house anywhere. I can just go off of what I
We're
heard on the
told,
tour.
yeah.
So that's my, yeah. My sources for these two stories is the tour. So there's another house that she told us about, and it's what she said was 627 Hughes Street. And that it was built in 1991 by a J.W. White. This can't be possible because it was built in 1989. 1896, not 1891, like that address. So either she got the address wrong, I heard the address wrong, it's also possible.
Yeah.
But I also couldn't find a J.W. White, and I also know J.W. White is like very bland name, but couldn't find anything on that. And then she said really specifically that a Charles Mayhew died in the house. She's like, a lot of people died in the house, which is, that's what happens in old houses. People die in them. People weren't going to hospitals for everything, so they were dying in their homes. And people still die in their homes, but like to a greater number.
Yeah.
But they're like, the hauntings reportedly started with specifically when this Charles Mayhew died. So I was like, okay, great. I can search this Charles Mayhew maybe and see if I can find more on the house. Just to see if there's a bigger story to go with it than mm-hmm. what she said. Could not find a Charles Mayhew that lived in Cape May at any point in time. Could not find a Charles Mayhew that died in Cape May, for sure, during a time frame in which the house existed. So either Charles Mayhew is wrong, or something's wrong there.
Yeah.
There's no Charles Mayhew that died in that house, because it would have been in the newspapers. So I don't know what's up with the story, but the closest one I found was that Charles Mayhew who was a traveling Methodist preacher who seemed like someone who could randomly die in Cape May and not necessarily be specifically noted, because his like neck of the woods was that region of New Jersey. But he died in like 1868, and again, the house wasn't built until the 1890s, so he can't have died in a house that didn't exist. Either way, the paranormal happenings are said to have occurred post him dying. These paranormal happenings include footsteps, closets opening on their own. Once someone saw an apparition of a little boy at the foot of their bed, and I don't know how this could be connected to Charles Mayhew, because I did assume that he was an adult, but I guess he could be a child.
Or came back as a child? I don't know.
That's upsetting. And this was all, like, older owners. Like, most of these ghost stories seem to have come from, like, the 1970s for some reason. They're all, like, in that time frame. Most of them aren't very recent.
Satanic region.
That's very true, though. It's basically, like, the resurgence of spiritualism.
I mean, I was going to say, maybe it's, like, everybody saying they have ghost stories, so they're cool like everybody else who's actually...
I think there was also a time when Cape May was sort of going downhill. People weren't touring there anymore.
Yeah.
So it might have been like an alternative thing. One, to keep the mind occupied for the people who did permanently live there, and two, to sort of attract tourism by adding these stories. Anyway, the current owners have never experienced anything outside of like an odd feeling here and there, and sometimes they catch a glimpse out of the corner of their eye, but that can be anything anywhere. So they've not really experienced anything haunted. This particular house with that address is a vacation rental currently, and you can look it up on like Cape May's vacation rental thing. It has 8 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms, and comfortably sleeps 19 people, and it costs the low price of $3,900 in the off season for a week.
Wow, that's so affordable.
Well, but I did some breakdowns. It does cost $9,000 per week during peak season, but if 19 individual adults were to stay there off season for a week, it would be $205 for the week per person, which is not bad. So now we're going to get to my bigger story from this tour, which had like actual research done with it. So my sources for that are Wikipedia, drphysic.com, ralstonphysichouse.com, and capemay.com. So this is about the Physic House. So this is the house of Emlyn Physic. Emlyn Physic is the grandson of Phyllis Sing Physic, who is known as the father of American surgery and the inventor of the first flavored American soda. It was marketed as a palatable gastrointestinal treatment. So it was a medicine that tasted yummy.
That sounds disgusting.
Well, think about it, like when you're sick and mom says like have Sprite or ginger ale just to have like the nice bubbles because it's supposed to help ease tummy troubles. That's what he was marketing. I think like cherry flavored might have been some of the original flavoring.
Ew, fruit syrup of specifically. Course it was.
Anyway, so Emlyn's just living off the coattails of his grandpa's money and success. And that's basically all I could find out about his life. He didn't seem to do much. Anyway, he built this house in 1897 in Cape May, New Jersey. It has 18 rooms, was designed by architect Frank Furness, and it's an excellent example of Queen Anne stick style homes. It is a really, really pretty house.
Mm-hmm. Did you pass it on the tour?
Yeah. So it's not the first house built on that location. The first known house is the Ralston Physic House, which was built sometime in the 1850s, with this current facade dating to 1869, because it does still exist. They moved it.
Mm-hmm.
Emlyn moved it across the street from where he wanted to build the mansion, because he decided right there is where he needed to build it. And then they lived in the moved house while they built the mansion.
Yeah.
He lived there with his mom, Mrs. Frances M. Ralston, and his two aunts, Emily and Isabella. So it was Emlyn, who never married, his widowed mother, and his two aunts that never married.
That is weird.
So yeah, they lived in the house across the street while the mansion was built.
Gay besides the mom?
Honestly, these are the questions that I also asked while I was studying.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, but that was like for all.
But I mean, like living with your mom, okay, but also two aunts, even for that time, married. It's not really normal.
That's a lot of people to not marry in the family. So Emlyn was 21 when he commissioned the building of this house, which is how much he's living off the money of his family. Emily, who is the one of the aunts, says Emily and Isabella are the aunts. Emily is described as a party girl.
Was he named after the one aunt?
I assume so.
Yeah.
Emlyn and Emily. Emily was described as a party girl and was the personal chef for the family's many dogs. most of which lived in like a dog run out back, but she would sneak some of them into her room sometimes, which was not allowed because Frances did not like animals inside. And she was a very strict woman. Frances is Emlyn's mom, the widow. So Emlyn was a fan of animals, like his aunt, and he was the head of the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. That's basically his one fun fact of his personal.
You know, if I could live off of my family's money, and just help animals,
that's not bad. They really should have like talked that up more.
Mm-hmm.
So Isabella, who's the other aunt, suffered from epilepsy and was confined to a wheelchair.
Mm.
She died young. She died, I think, at, like, 32 or something in 1882. I think she was about 32, and she died. And there's conflicting stories. Some say that she was, like, a massive embarrassment. She was kept on the second story and never allowed to go anywhere else. And
like
that,
any kind of issue person?
And that really, like, is part of the
lore
for the ghosts existing in this space, is that she was, like, really, really confined.
But I mean, if they're trying to prevent animals from being abused, why would they treat a human like that?
Right?
You know?
I'm trying to remember what... I saw a lot of houses. I'm trying to remember which one this specifically is. Because it looks like she would not be... Based on when you look at this house, which we'll have pictures on the Instagram, it has, like, a huge three-quarters wraparound porch. Why would you not... Like, she would clearly be allowed to go sit on that porch. It'd be insane to me that they wouldn't allow that, because it's supposed to be healing. Like, being outside in the sea air.
Well, I don't know how much they knew about epilepsy back then.
No, but in general, that was like, well.
No, you I know. Have I'm just saying they might know you. More about epilepsy than they did other stuff. But
maybe.
I kind of doubt it, because they don't know a lot about it now.
He's from a family like his grandfather is the father of
a medicine
surgery.
Person? Yeah.
In America, it doesn't make sense to me that they would be that. Like, ashamed.
She's so
not that they necessarily wouldn't, but especially if she's in the wheelchair, and, oh my gosh, Jenny, don't do that. It's so weird.
If you hear huffing, it's this cat.
Cat breathing into the microphone.
Because I just heard her huff.
She does it all the time. She loves huffing. Like, obviously, I can't say for it because I wasn't there, but I feel like she probably wasn't.
I was going to say, like I said, even the animal cruelty thing, it wouldn't make sense if you're locking her away. If you're trying to...
If
you're treating animals better than everybody else at that time.
You're literally cooking the animal's meals.
Yeah.
To me, it doesn't make sense that you would.
The original farmer's dog. That stuff is so expensive.
So anyway, Isabella dies young because she has some medical conditions.
People still die so young from epilepsy. It blows my mind.
In 1915, Frances dies, so the mom who doesn't like animals in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then Emlyn, so her son, dies a year later in 1916. Oh. So Emily is the last one in the house, and she lives.
What did he die from?
I don't know. He was like 58. Which is not young, but not old. So Emily was the last to die. She died in 1935, so she lived like
how
a long
was she?
Time alone in the house. I don't know how much younger or older she was than her other siblings, but I don't think she was the oldest sibling. But she was like old, because the neighbor, Frances Brooks, was cared for her in her old age, so she wasn't. She was an
in
older.
In my mind, she's like in her 80s.
I would assume
I didn't
so.
Follow the timeline, but...
Well, I didn't give a timeline for how old Emily was.
Yeah.
Frances Brooks was also a cousin. I don't know how distant, but his middle name is their last name, Ralston.
Okay, yeah.
So he's somehow related. And he has left the house by Emily because he cared for her for so mm-hmm. long, which is very nice of her. So yeah, Frances is left... Frances Brooks... The man cousin who took care of Emily in her old age is left the house. And he has it for just a few years. I don't think he ever lives in it. I think he just owns the property. Because he, like, lives next door, literally. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't need to move?
I was
going to
say, he doesn't need another house.
So the next person to live there, for sure, again, he might have, but I know for sure this guy did, is Dr. Marion Newcomer. And her husband, Dr. Harry Sidney Newcomer. And they bought the house in 1946. Every other thing does put the man first. And I said, no, it's not going to be his wife, Dr. Marion Newcomer. It's going to be her husband. She's a doctor, too.
Yeah.
So Marion doesn't get to live there long. She dies in 1949. And then in 1955, Harry remarries. So that's like a respectable mourning time. He marries his assistant, Pauline, and the couple move into the house together. I think he was always living there, but Pauline moves in, and Pauline couldn't stand it. She couldn't live there. Lived there for like 2 years, and she goes, I can't do it. And then they move into an apartment in like the town center. She's like, I can't, it's haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that means it's haunted by ghosts or if it's haunted by like maybe Harry's like, okay, we have to keep it that way because that's how Marion had it. Like, I don't know if it
yeah.
was like haunted by her presence in the home, not like as a ghost, but like this was her house and, you know, Harry might still be in mourning.
Yeah.
Or if it's like literally there are ghosts here. Don't know which one. In 1967, the house is sold to Cape May Inns. So newcomers own it that long, but they don't. It's just sort of sitting
occupied.
There for a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they rented it out, but it's not. They're not living in it. So they sell it in 67 to be one of the many vacation rentals. So the daughter of the couple who owned Cape May Inn, so the people who bought the house, recalls Harry telling them that he is a man of science and that ghosts should not exist, but he cannot explain what is happening in that
Ooh.
House, which now makes me think, oh, it's not, you know, it's just not, it's not a sad mourning space and that's why it's haunted. It's like literally there's ghosts here, it's haunted. He said, like Harry said, he experienced footsteps, unexplained noises every night. And it was so often that it's like, at first he was obviously checking all the time, and after a while he's like, I can't anymore. It's not worth figuring out what this is. Because he thought someone was living in the house. Because it's a
yeah.
huge house for two people to live in. He thought someone else was, like, hiding in the rooms. So he's like, no, it's just, there's nobody here. There's nobody here, and I don't know why this is happening.
He spooked.
So today, the original house that I was talking about, the one that moved across the street, is a vacation rental. So you can stay in the original Ralston Physic house. Just across the street from the mansion. And then the mansion is a house museum that's open for public tours. I did not tour it. We didn't have time. Now to the paranormal. So this is all from an article by Craig McManus, which I did like. It's part of my upper citations, but he just talks about his experience a lot. So I thought I might as well definitely say that it's him writing it.
Yeah.
So Craig stayed in the house sometime in the 1990s. This is before it was opened as a museum. He claims he's a medium and describes ghosts as a field of energy with a consciousness. That's how he understands the paranormal world. Which, when you think about, like, it's the idea of, like, energy can't be created or destroyed. So, while in the mansion, he says he sensed two energies, both feminine. One kind and gentle, and the other miserable. Craig believed initially that these ghosts belonged to Emily and Francis. This is what he believed initially, is that these ghosts were Emily and Francis, because Isabel wasn't really talked about in the history, which is where he gets that. This is where, like, a lot of the "she was kept upstairs" lore comes from. And again, I can't prove that one way or the other, because he can't prove it one way or the other. This is what he thinks as a medium. But eventually, upon doing research after staying there, he finds out about Isabel, and he goes, "Oh my gosh, it wasn't Francis, it was Isabella." And then, so he thinks it's those two that are staying there, like, that are stuck there. Mm-hmm. And he has, like, a whole theory where he's like, you know, Isabella dies first. The other two, Francis and Emlyn, die, and they go on. They're done in this world. And then Emily dies, and she, like, as she's, her spirit's leaving the house, she looks back and she sees Isabella stuck there, like she was stuck there, at, like, in life, right? And that's, like, his theory as to why these ghosts are haunting here.
Poor Dixie.
So now we get to Craig's descriptions of the paranormal activity, which include, in Emily's room, people, including Craig, but other people as well, report feeling a kind of energy that makes them feel like a buzz. And they don't feel it in there. They feel it when they walk out. Not that, like, they left it, but they realize, oh, that was something I was feeling in there. It's not an energy that smacks you, but it's energy that you realize is present in that space when you leave it. It's, like, positive, I assume, you know, just, like, bubbly buzz.
I'm here.
And then in Francis's room, Craig says he felt claustrophobic despite it being a large room, and then he also felt queasy and depressed.
Maybe he ate a bad burrito before he went.
And so this is what makes me confused, is why would, because then he says, oh wait, it's not Francis haunting it, it's Isabella, but why would Isabella be in that room having those feelings when it's not? I don't understand.
I don't get it.
Anyway, there's also a number of ghost dogs that have been experienced that, like, brush against you and stuff. Oh,
that's how my house is going to be.
One time someone saw an apparition of the dog sitting on the, like, laying on the parlor in the, on the hearth in the parlor, just like, that's like, so, you know, cute, in the warm spot. So I have to assume that the dog that lived in the house after Francis died, because weren't allowed in the house before then. Mm-hmm. said to be one of Emily's dogs. And then other paranormal experiences in the house include footsteps, strange noises, cold spots, doors opening on their own, and ghostly voices. I dislike that. Anyway, those are some of the fun little stories from Pitney, New Jersey.
I like the dog ghosts, obviously, the best. Okay, so my story today is about Woodburn Mansion. Got my information from wikipedia.org. Also, I did these notes, like, over 2 weeks ago now, so this is new to both of us. Time to stay. Wikipedia.org, woodbury.delaware.gov, onlyinyourstate.com, and then the Evening Sun newspaper from November 3rd, 1973. So the history. In 1684, David Morgan and his heirs were granted land in Delaware by the Swedish crown. Wouldn't that be nice? Ooh. In the 1780s, Charles Hillier III purchased the land at the sheriff's sale. They gave so much information about David Morgan, and then he, like, and basically, like, does nothing with it. And I'm like, that's so why funny. Is he so involved in this story? Anyway, so he purchases the land at a sheriff's sale for $110. What I would give to have back then's prices. I wouldn't want to live back then ever in my life. But the prices, sure. In 1790, he constructed the home that eventually was called Woodburn. So the house was inherited by Mary Hilliard's daughter and her husband, Martin W. Bates. He was a doctor, merchant, lawyer, and a U.S. senator. He really did it all.
That's a lot of things.
I don't know what kind of doctor.
Yeah. So just in case you're curious about how much money that was back then, it's $2,400 now. So that's an entirely unfair price.
I really
want to
off myself.
To buy anything at.
That is ridiculous. So anyway, in 1820, Bates leased Woodburn to the governor, Jacob Stout. The house is a two-story mansion with 7 bedrooms, and the exterior brick is in the Flemish bond pattern.
Okay.
I don't know what that is, but some people like to know these details. So Bates sold the house in 1825 to Daniel and Mary. This says cowgirl. And I do not believe that it's her last name.
You don't think it's Daniel and Mary cowgirl?
I think this is an autocorrect. But that's hilarious.
I wonder what it was. Oh, Cowgill.
Probably like Cowgill or something. Cowgill. Yeah. He was a devoted abolitionist and a Quaker. So, one of the good guys, right? He freed his family slaves, and allowed them to meet in the Great Hall at Woodburn.
I was like, not all Quakers were good guys.
I was going to say, well, an abolitionist and Quaker. Yeah. So, the house stayed in the family for years until it was sold in 1912 to Daniel O. Hastings. When he owned it, he added the brick front porch, pillars on the south facade, a reflecting pool, and other interior updates. So it's like, it's a fancy place.
Yeah.
Teddy is sitting down sad.
How is he? Oh, because so you're sad.
They said we'll be back over soon. My story's not too long, so. Sorry, everybody. I'll probably cut this all out, but our parents, well, I guess just our family childhood cat just died.
Yeah.
Well, one of our childhood cats. We had two. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So I was saying it's just a fancy property. So he sold the house in 1918 to a retired dentist, Frank Hall, who did more interior renovations. While he owned the house, one of their house guests was Jessica Irby, who would later live in the house as the wife of the governor of Delaware.
Well, she has some pretty fancy connections.
She's like, I know where I want to live.
Yeah, can you imagine that? You'd be like, I know what I like to get this here. House. I know how we can do this.
So after Hall's death in 1953, there was a proposal to secure the house as the governor's mansion, but that was disapproved by the legislature for some reason. And the property was divided in two. A school purchased the majority of the land, and then Thomas Murray bought the house and surrounding acre and a half. So I'm like, how much land did this house have?
I assume it was a full farm.
A lot.
Like,
yeah.
It is.
So in 1965, Governor Charles L. Terry Jr. and his wife, Jessica Irby Terry, secured Woodburn as the governor's mansion.
Like, she really said she stayed there, like, and then she married the governor, and she's like, oh, I know what we can do. This is going to be the thing we're going to do.
So the house was refurbished by Mrs. Terry with period pieces from when the house was constructed, which I like that. The decorating was finished a year later, and an open house was held in February 1966. Woodburn has since served as the official residence of governors ever since.
All because of the ambition
of Miss Jessica Irby. So, the house has been well preserved as an essential component of the state museum system, which wants to showcase representative Delaware houses from different eras and socioeconomic strata. The house was also believed to have served as a stop on the Underground Railroad because of, what was his name? Daniel Cowgirl.
Daniel Cowgirl. Cowgill.
So, on to the haunting. So, many people consider this to be the most haunted house in Delaware. Which, like, Delaware's not a very big state, so that's not a great feat, but...
No, Delaware has 3 counties.
But it's old.
It is old.
So...
And nothing's in any of them.
Yeah. So almost every resident of the house over the years reported hearing or seeing one of the mansion's ghosts. One of the ghosts alleged to be on the property is said to be of a southern slave raider who apparently died by hanging from a tree that still stands today.
Oh. What's a slave raider?
Like, you're chasing them down. Like, oh, okay. You're chasing down the free ones to try to, like, recapture them. Which, that doesn't make sense. But anyway.
Last thing I searched was
Or, like, they're trying to get, like, the ones that are trying to run to get free.
Yeah, they're the...
And you're tracking them down.
Again. They're just bounty hunters for slaves.
Yeah. So legend goes that one night, a group of slave raiders came to the mansion, and Mr. Cowgill, here it's actually properly written, chased them away. One attempted to escape by climbing the large poplar tree in the front yard. Allegedly, he slipped and his head got caught in a knot in the tree, where he hanged until he eventually died.
Oh.
To this day, it is said you can still hear his screams. So, oh. I think he got what he deserved. But like I said, that's not necessarily a true story. Governor's wives have heard scampering footsteps in the dining room at all hours of the night, which that's gross. Like, people, like, moving quickly through the dining room.
Why is everyone running so much? Slow down.
And others have seen Revolutionary-era men floating across the room. That's fun.
Oh.
I like when there's always, like, either a top or a bottom half of a ghost.
I do like that. It's just not the whole thing.
There was also a young girl seen in the garden wearing a red checkered gingham dress and a sunbonnet.
Cute.
She is seen splashing and playing in the pools and fountains, and she was seen crashing the inauguration of Governor Michael's castle in 1985.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Guests felt something tugging at them throughout the ceremony, and they saw a girl floating in a corner of the reception hall.
That's actually super cool.
I know. Sometime in, which, like, the stories of this house are actually pretty good, I feel like.
Yeah. I like it because there's, and not to say, like, politicians are specifically credible, but there's something that, if you say you experienced these things, it can discredit you in a certain way.
You can be taken less seriously. Yeah. Yeah. So sometime in the 1870s, a resident brought home a friend for the Christmas holidays. The friend was in an upstairs bedroom at night, and they saw an apparition of an old man, which scared them so bad that they fainted. The first documented Woodburn ghost appeared around 1815, about 25 years after the house was built. Mr. and Mrs. Bates were entertaining Mr. Lorenzo Dow, who was a well-known Methodist preacher. One night at the breakfast table, Mr. Bates asked how Mr. Dow... She asked Mr. Dowdo to begin the meal with a prayer. He hesitated and asked if they should wait for the other guests in the house. Mrs. Bates was confused and said there were no other guests. And he said that he had met a man on the staircase on his way down to breakfast and described him in detail. He was an older man and supposedly wore a powdered wig, knee breeches, and a ruffled shirt. Which, like, it's 1815. Why are you assuming that's just another regular house guest? Was he at a costume party? So, this description bothered Mrs. Bates because it was an exact description of her father, Mr. Charles Hilliard III. Mr. Hilliard, the builder of Woodburn, has been seen by others since Mr. Dow first saw him. Mr. Hilliard, according to Dover history, was known to enjoy a strong drink.
Ooh.
If a glass of wine is left downstairs at Woodburn during the night, an empty glass will be found in the morning. Oh. Everyone believes this is the work of Mr. Hilliard, but also possibly other ghosts in the house.
I like to think it's it's like some
staff. One of
the
things that got me about this was that it was like a wine-drinking ghost or something like that is what some of the titles were.
I think it's a staff that like really popularized that so they could be left some of the, like, the nice wine that they got tired of not being allowed to try.
Mr. Frank Hall, another past owner of the house, claimed to sometimes pass Mr. Hilliard on the stairs and described him as others did in the past with, I guess, the powdered wig and the britches.
I guess.
So Governor Tribbett's wife, Jean?
Where am I looking? Jan?
Regularly checked the stairway for Mr. Hilliard's presence. She would even leave out wine for him from time to time, but never found an empty glass. She loved the ghost stories and would sometimes give candlelight tours of the house to tour groups.
That's really cute.
Isn't that so cute?
I love that.
When Governor Charles Terry Jr. was living in the mansion, one ghost was seen helping himself to vintage wines in the dining room.
That's really funny.
Another owner of the house said he'd fill his glass decanter every night and find it empty the next morning. Wine-drinking ghosts usually appeared in Revolutionary-era clothes, so it's also, like I said, it could be Mr. Hilliard, but also that's some, like, revolutionary soldiers, I guess.
They were saying they're like, oh, free booze.
But anyway, the mansion is open to visitors Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 4:00. And that is the story of the Woodburn Mansion and the wine-drinking ghosts.
I like the Woodburn Mansion. I thought that was fun. Wine-drinking ghosts.
And the little girl ghost.
The little girl ghost. I also like how it was acquired as the governor's mansion.
It's
so funny to me. That one was like, ooh, this is going to be my house. I don't know how we're going to do it, but it's going to be my house. What you doing, Dixie? Not Dixie. Jin.
Oh, Dixie's dead. You're going to be depressed about this. Hit me and I'll hit you.
She's so rude. Although she's huffing.
You're going to fall backwards.
No, she's really good balance. She's sitting up like a prairie dog. Oh, no, she's growling. Gosh, you feral, feral cat.
You cannot come over today.
That's why you have to wear a collar. Because if you get out, people are going to think you're feral.
You did not have a home. Anyway, try not to kill anybody and don't mess Ouija boards.
Bye.